Get the cheese to sick bay. The doctor should look at it as soon as possible.
It is the way in which we propagate our species. Please demonstrate how this is accomplished.
So, what's next?
Hi, welcome to Intense Trek, a Star Trek recap and ranking podcast. I'm the evil mirror universe Charlie Etheridge Nunn, a writer and fan of the highly nuanced Frank Miller comic Holy Terror.
Hello, I'm Evil Miles from a parallel universe, and I'm a fan of the Geoff Johns metaphysical classic Doomsday Clock. For some reason, I also sound like Alan Moore on Quaaludes.
This is part of the Nerd and Tie Network, which we have infiltrated and will rise through their ranks one stabbed back at a time, whether it's their crime fiction or actual play podcasts. Each episode, we're going to watch stories from three different Star Trek shows and rank them on a big list from worst to best, but, you know, in an evil totalitarian way. In this reality, we're on the 39th film in the Dark Universe franchise, and Miles and I have had to swap facial hair to show how different and evil we both are. Oh, God. Miles, I can't do it. I can't keep that up. Alan Moore? Oh, that was amazing. Right.
I used to practice my Alan Moore impression at Starbucks.
Good. Is this why you got such glowing reviews from customers?
Oh, well, that, and every time they asked me where my accent was from, I would tell them either eBay or Grindr.
Okay. Well, you've probably figured that out already, but we are Casual Trek, and we're going to be talking about mirror universes today. But before we go on, to make sure that we keep things casual, Miles, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying since we last spoke?
Earlier this year, I started watching the acclaimed classic 70s TV series MASH, which I've restarted my first season rewatch, and it is great fun. In the comics verse, I have been rereading the 80s Justice League International incarnation of the Justice League, where Batman knocks out Guy Gardner with one punch, and
just one punch,
and Booster Gold have a lot of laughs, and Black Canary looks really 80s.
Yes.
Which is a shame, because I do like the original look.
Well, yeah, who doesn't? JLI is a really interesting one. I got into it only because the most curmudgeonly colleague of mine at Dave's Comics, when I was working there, Hugh, he helped me find the Keith Giffen Legion of Superheroes issues, and then was like, have you heard of this? Like, they did Justice League, and I never paid attention to Justice League, and he managed to find me cheap copies of the entire JLI run, and it's so much fun, but it's also, when it gets dramatic, when it gets serious, it can be heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah. Like, I read a lot of these comics as a kid, because back in, like, the 80s and 90s, I think it was Fleetway released monthly, like, DC comics, like Superman, Batman, like a one called, like, DC Action, which had, like, New Teen Titans. And this, I think it's like, this is, like, in the post-crisis. I think it was in the Superman one. They would have a Superman, John Byrne, Man of Steel era reboot story, and an issue of JLI. So, like, the first time I've ever experienced a lot of these characters, it's stuff like where they're fighting the Gray Man. And I have no clue who the Gray Man is, because, like, you know, when you're a kid, you think Batman villain, you know, you think, like, superhero villains like the Joker, Lex Luthor, Brainiac, the Gray Man, a guy who looks like Harlan Ellison in a turtleneck.
The worst thing is, you mentioned the Gray Man. Suddenly I remembered it, and I was like, actually, this makes villains from the New 52, like Mr. Graves, suddenly feel in like they've got a place, as rubbish as Mr. Graves was. But yeah, it was a good fun run. So how far through? Like, that's a on the video for this, you've waved the book around, and it looks phone book thick.
It is phone book thick. It is. It says here, it has the first 17 issues, two annuals, and a tie-in issue from Suicide Squad, where none of the characters, everyone knows from the movies, with the exception of Rick Flagg, Deadshot, and Amanda Waller, actually appear. But that's also written by John Ostrander, one of the best Star Wars writers out there, because he wrote a lot of really good Dark Horse comics, like the Clone War era, prequel era comics, Star Wars Legacy, where Luke Skywalker's death's drug-addicted grandson tries to be dark and gritty with his skimpily attired purple Twilight girlfriend, because clearly John Ostrander really likes writing sexy lady Twilights. They appear a disturbing amount of times, almost a Clermontian amount of times in his Star Wars comics.
Wow.
And what about you?
For me, I've been enjoying a show which I'm extremely late for party, but that's because it's not actually come out here in the UK. So I found
a question.
Yeah.
Are you as late to the party as I am with MASH?
No, not quite. Although I've seen barely any episodes of MASH, so I'm even later to the party than you with that. No, I found a bottle washed up on Brighton Marina. Instead for messaging,
no,
had a USB stick. Sorry, you've got previous with this kind of thing then.
Look, I've been to Brighton Beach and I have the tetanus shots to prove it.
Well, yeah, which is why I felt relatively safe in opening this bottle and finding a USB stick with "Our Flag Means Death" on it.
Oh!
Nowhere has it over here.
I thought HBO Max was like available in the UK, or am I completely pulling an American and not paying attention to how things work outside this country?
Oh, man. HBO is the weirdest over here because it's been a lot of the shows are sliced up and put out all over the place. Sky/Now have the majority of the HBO content. And for some reason, Our Flag Means Death hasn't been on their roster of shows, which is annoying because I saw all the discourse about it. I saw everyone going, oh my God, this is an amazing show. The cast are all really fun. The comedy is really good. And everyone shipping Steed and Blackbeard like crazy. And watching it, I had that trepidation when someone recommends something to you. You know, like inevitably when someone goes, oh, have you seen The Wire? And it's one of those shows, much like The Wire, where you go, sorry to inform you, it's actually really good. Like, don't worry, you won't get, like, I thought I'd get let down and go, it's been hyped so much that it can't meet my expectations. It can't be as good as all of the frothing, all of the raving about it. And it's really good fun. The show's by Taika Waititi, who's got a good pedigree with things like Flight of Conchords, doing Shadows, and it's a really fun tale about pirates who are rubbish, frankly. Like, even the ones trying to mutiny against Steed, who's a kind of a rich boy who wants to be a pirate with no competence, just a lot of money, and no real clue about what he's doing. And all of his crew, even when they're talking about mutinying, kind of know they've got a good thing going, and they're not very good at piracy either. So they've all kind of fallen into being gloriously rubbish together. The ship scenes, they look nicer than just being a set, even though that's what they are. But the LED backdrop screen makes it have a kind of hyper-real, slight warm glow to it all. And yeah, cool. If you're a fan of the level of piracy of your Muppet Treasure Island and all of that kind of but also with that like charming but occasionally wickedly funny we do kind of humor, it's just so much fun. I need season two to be out, and I'm probably going to rewatch season one long before that happens anyway. So yeah, a hearty recommend from me with that.
Okay, definitely I'll give that a watch next time. I'm taking a break from HBO Max because, you know, to save pennies here and there. Yeah. And hopefully there's still an HBO Max you know, when I come back round to it, given all the HBO Max timely controversy which is going on at this moment of recording.
Yes. By the time this airs, which is, I think, late September, early October. Yeah, if there is an HBO Max, will be a surprise. I do wonder if they will have found a way to retroactively remove all records of every show that they've had from Time. So yeah, that's weird with them. But yeah, without further ado, we have some Trek to deal with. And I've never been a fan of the Mirror Universe episodes, personally. I don't know if you've been... You've probably experienced more of them than me. I've seen, I think, all of the DS9 ones over the years in whatever order they aired on television or in the unlabeled VHS tapes I had in a bin bag. I hadn't seen the original series one, and then I got really bored with Discovery. And what felt like half a season, but has turned out to only have been like two or three episodes. What did you make of Mirror Universe?
Actually, one of the very first experiences I had with Trek in the 90s was a Mirror Universe comic book story.
Hmm.
I know in the Calibration episode, I mentioned the Trident Comics Star Trek comic, which was briefly out during the popularity of the films and TNG. And I had issue 3 or 4 of the Mirror Universe Saga, originally put out by DC. And that was called the Tantalus Trap. And a trading card, which had the synopsis of Mirror, Mirror. I never actually saw the story itself until, like, I could pick up the DVDs in the early Y2Ks. The DS9 ones, which I've seen, are fun. They feel much more kind of fun and campy than the rest of the show. It kind of feels like they go, okay, let's just act out an episode of Blake 7 for 50 minutes, but with money.
Yeah. Yeah,
I will probably mention Blake 7 a good 5 or 6 times during the course of this episode. Okay, I'm going to quickly invoke Sandtimer.
Okay.
Because I'm going to have to go on a ramble.
Okay, right. I have Sandtimer. Ready?
Ready.
Go.
Okay, Blake 7 is a late 70s, early 80s space opera put out by the BBC. It unfortunately came out a year after a little film called Star Wars and had about one quadrillionth less budget. It is basically Robin Hood in space, where our brave freedom fighter Rog Blake wakes up and realizes, oh no, I live in a totalitarian space empire, I should do something about it, promptly gets done up on false child molestation charges and gets shipped off to a penal colony. This is the first episode. By episode 2, he's escaped from the spaceship taking him to the penal colony, found an alien super ship and a bunch of criminals who he was escaping with, and immediately goes, right, we're going to start the revolution. Ooh. Show
time up.
Alternates. Time up.
Time up.
The show alternates between... Oh, fine. Fine.
Yeah.
I'll invoke Sandtimer later.
What, part 2 to try and cheat your way past?
But this is the evil... This is the evil episode, so therefore, basic human Sandtimer morality no longer applies.
Oh, God, right. So, first up, thinking of old television shows, we have an episode from the original series, season 2, episode 10, titled Mirror, Mirror. This aired on the 6th October 1967. Written by Jerome Bixby, directed by Mark Daniels. And we have a couple of hits here. From the UK, we had the Bee Gees with Massachusetts. Not one of theirs that I know, actually. I know maybe two or three Bee Gees. Yeah. What little I know about Massachusetts is Emma Frost's Academy, Gilmore Girls, and Lovecraftian Horror. So I assume it mixes all three of those somehow.
All I know of the Bee Gees is the soundtrack to the far more depressing than you would expect film, Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, it is a bit.
Which even Werner Herzog would probably watch and go, that is too much for me.
Yeah, it's a bit rough. And the US had the box tops with the letter. Often I end up watching or finding videos for any of these, where at least for more recent ones, because I'm old and don't know what modern music is, but I realize I've failed to do so backwards in time and just assume that I know what historical music is. Alas, I don't for this. But that places us in the pop cultural landscape for those who know. And now I have my 5-minute timer ready. And Miles, I believe you're the one recapping Mirror Mirror.
I am.
Excellent. Well.
Okay.
Ready? Engage.
Right. We open with New York City's Theater in the Parks performance of I, Claudius. Just kidding. It is Kirk, Scotty, Bones, and Uhura talking to some idiot in a chair dressed in Roman garb for some reason. This planet has a lot of dilithium, but they're not going to give it over to the Federation because the Federation can use it for less than peaceful purposes. Kirk's reaction is okay, fair dues. Not a fan of this, but like, we respect your right to say no. And the Roman guy says, you know, with your superior firepower, you could just take it by force, which Kirk goes, we're Starfleet. That ain't what we do. There's a bad kind of space storm. So he tells Spock to beam him up off the planet. There is an accident in the transporter, and Spock stays back. Kirk, Scotty, McCoy, and Uhura get teleported to a different Enterprise wearing different clothing. And Spock, wait, hang on a second. Can Vulcans grow facial hair in the space of minutes? No! It actually might be an evil Spock. The Roman-style salute kind of gives it away. Turns out, they're on the ship of the Enterprise of the Terran Federation, who are a bunch of marauding space fascist bastards who have basically been conquering and sleazing their way around the universe. Kirk is under orders to get that dilithium, but Kirk immediately goes, okay, we're in a parallel universe, but our basic morality still applies. So we're going to try and make sure the planet doesn't get blown up. Meanwhile, as they make their way through the evil Enterprise, Kirk is jumped by evil Chekhov, who has a gang of thugs, because apparently in this mirror universe, if you kill someone, everyone else automatically goes up one step in rank. This, by the way, was how I became a supervisor at Starbucks. Kirk is able to beat off Chekhov, while Uhura is being touched up by a very scarred and very sleazy evil space Sulu. They're trying to find a way back home using the transporter, and Scotty and Bones are working on that. At the same time, Kirk is trying to make sure that he doesn't actually kill everyone on the planet, despite that he has been ordered to by the Terran Federation, and his differing has made Mirror Spock kind of suspect. Mirror Spock still feels some sense of friendship to Kirk. Also, he doesn't want to be captain of the ship. He likes being second in command. And so when the Terran Federation tells Spock, hey, if Kirk doesn't do this, we order you to kill Kirk. And Spock decides to kind of loop Kirk in on a text message saying, oh, by the way, our bosses want me to kill you. Kirk, meanwhile, has discovered that his counterpart has two things that his Kirk that he doesn't have. One is a semi-dressed space concubine mistress, the captain's woman, and an alien device which can kill and observe called the Tantalus machine. Kirk really, really wants out, and so they plan their escape. But evil Spock with the beard finds out what they're planning and jumps them. But Kirk, in a fist fight which is replaced by their stunt doubles, is able to defeat Spock, but Spock is badly wounded and could die. Scotty is just completely ready to nope out of the situation, let Spock die, he's not our Spock. But Bones goes, I'm going to do a Starfleet, and I'm going to help this guy who looks like our Spock but is not. So he stays behind to help Spock. Spock immediately recovers and does a mind meld with Bones, finding out what's going on. He confronts Kirk in the transporter room, about to escape, and is prepared to arrest him, but Kirk says, "Spock, in the time I've been here, in this world of brutality and distrust and murdering your way to the top, it's not really an efficient system. How long do you think it's got on it?" And Spock goes, "I think the Terran Federation has like 250 years left on the clock." And Kirk goes, "What if you could change it? What if one man can change the system?"
Oh my God.
So close.
Okay, I'm sorry to stop you mid-speech, but okay, there we go. That's 5 minutes. Let's see how much over you go.
Okay, so Kirk says to Mirror Spock, "Spock, what if one man had the power to change things for the better? What if you had this really cool alien device called a Tantalus machine, which will allow you to get in control and thus be able to get in a position to make all the reforms?" Mirror Spock goes, "I'm not sure, but I'm going to subscribe to your newsletter at best and consider it." Meanwhile, Scarred Sulu bursts into the transporter so George Takei can finally kill Shatner under the pretense of having to kill Kirk for the evil Mirror Universe bosses. But Sulu's henchmen get killed by the Tantalus machine. So Spock gets first-hand experience of the power of the Tantalus machine. But realizing he needs his Kirk back, Spock, at the end of the day, helps send our heroes back to the Enterprise. But what happened to the mirror counterparts of Kirk, Scotty, Bones, and Uhura? Well, they turned up and within 5 minutes got promptly thrown in the brig because Spock just saw through them immediately because, I don't know, Kirk probably tried to hump his chair. And as they escape, Kirk is like, "Man, Mirror Universe Spock, he was a bit of all right, wasn't he?" And Bones is like, "Yeah, Mirror Spock, kind of all right." But then the door opens and the Enterprise's new female yeoman turns up, and it's the same woman who was the captain's woman in the alternate universe. And so the episode ends with Kirk about to kind of do something which HR will frown upon. And you, as the credits roll, you can basically see him walking up to her about to do his best, "Ladies." And with that, we say goodbye to Mirror Mirror.
Okay, that's 2 minutes and 7 seconds. To be honest, I thought somehow you were going to pull it out within like 5 seconds of that, but yeah, there was still a bit to cover. So like Mirror Kirk and Scotty and Uhura and Bones, they come from a society where backstabbing is constant. No matter what, you just do a murder and then rise up the ranks, and that's fine. I'm guessing they didn't really have any training on actual espionage or anything like that.
No, for like a I'm going to say that the Terran Empire, as presented in Mirror Mirror, doesn't look like it's based on Nazism or national socialism, fascism, but definitely more Roman Empire, and yeah, very much what Western pop culture kind of assumes how the Roman Empire worked.
It certainly seems like what the modern Tory party is basing itself on currently.
Oh, definitely. And as I remember texting you saying, this is a really inefficient way to have an empire work. Then I realized, then as I was thinking about it yesterday, I think that's the point. I think we're meant to see that this society doesn't work because, like, when asked, Spock goes, "Yeah, 250 years tops." And after that, boom, collapse.
Yeah, spoilers for the DS9 episode we'll be covering, but Spock was a bit optimistic when he gave that amount of time. But yeah, it's an interesting one. They're definitely not an efficient empire, but then it feels like they're, even though they're somehow in space the same as the Federation, it feels ultimately pretty stagnant. Like they've not really learned or grown at all.
They basically have the biggest guns, and that's how that's how they probably dictated power for like who knows how long. And yeah, like part of me, as I was watching, part of me was like, I wish we had seen more of like the mirror universe versions on like our Enterprise. But it is kind of funny that they're kind of worrying about what they could be getting up to. And we immediately jump cut to Spock just basically all but yeeting evil Kirk into a cell. Like, that bit is actually kind of funny.
Oh, God, yeah, that's so good. That kind of, oh, no, they're going to be having a hard time. Nope. No, frankly, nope. They're probably doing better.
Spock's got this. At the same time, even though this is a universe based on distrust and backstabbing, we see that Spock still has some measure of friendship, or at the very least, respect for his Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Because he seems to be like the line, basically, even if it's his own interests, he seems to be going out of his way to make sure Kirk doesn't get killed.
It's interesting, really, and I think seeing it as the Terran Empire, and Spock's obviously done well, but is an outsider to those philosophies and those ideas, even if he's half Terran himself. Maybe that's some kind of indicator that actually having a sense of camaraderie and not a sense of I need to hire a gang, kill my way to the top, and get killed by one of my gang, and that's fine. That's just the status quo here. He's actually like, I've got a mate, and I'm fine being second in command because I can still be, you know, like powerful and shady and all of these things with my boy Jim in charge. It's interesting to see. I don't think it had a lot more that it could do. As fun as it would have been to see the mirror versions in the normal universe, I'm pleased that this isn't one they return to again and again and again. It's fine left as is.
It's a 50-minute episode of TV, and it's fun for it. Watching it, I'm thinking, it's the only time George Takei ever gets something to do in the original series, he's either evil or crazy. Because this is the most I've ever seen Sulu do in an episode of Star Trek where he's not got his top off waving a sword around.
It's a shame, really, because he can do good work, but maybe they were like, actually, he's good when he goes big, and let's use that sparingly.
He's really kind of like, he's good as evil Sulu, and he's kind of just perving all over Uhura, who is wearing the most fantastic boots. Those were the best boots.
Actually, that's something. I watched the episode in two parts over a couple of lunch breaks, and for one of them, I think for the latter half, my lodger, Lee, was there and watching it, and he saw kind of Uhura drawing the knives out of the boots and everyone with these tiny, tiny little knives and going, they've got phasers. Why don't they use the phasers? And I was like, Lee, a phaser effect would cost money. Like, sure, there are more dignified things to do than wave around, you know, something that's about the length of a pen.
Okay, speaking of the scene where Uhura is like trying to pretend to seduce Sulu and then pulls a knife on him and basically starts emasculating him in front of the bridge crew. There's the two red shirts standing by the lift doors, and the one on the stage right is like smirking. He's watching just Sulu basically getting cock-blocked by Uhura, and he's like, this is my kink. This is what I'm here for. This is why I joined the Empire, to watch my bosses basically get humiliated in front of me.
Well, good for him. I hope he's living his best life in the Mirror Universe. I really enjoyed it. I didn't really have a huge amount else thoughts-wise with this. Like, the death device, the kind of the one that Kirk's, like, ship's woman, who is Cersei Lannistering her way from captain to captain by the sounds of it. Like, at one of the big pivotal moments, she's the one that goes, just push the button, eliminate Sulu's mates.
Yeah. I was wondering when that was going to get put into play, because this episode feels like there's a lot cut out of it, because they get to the conclusion within 3 minutes of the closing credits.
Yeah.
Like, even for Star Trek, that's really pacey.
Yeah, it definitely moved at a clip, even if I had to do it in two sittings. It still kept momentum in a way that I'm not used to with the original series.
Yeah, like, it is... It's good and fun. Like, they've worked out the formula. Like, the majority... Like, I've not seen much of season two going on... Like, season two onwards. I mostly have seen most of, like, the first season, where it's a much more slower-paced show, and they've not kind of... And, you know, like, I think, like, with the stuff I've seen in season two, it is the much more kind of action-adventure-y show. And this one moves at a bloody clip.
Yeah, so for me, I think it's probably the strongest out of the proper original series episodes.
Yeah.
That's definitely going to come into a factor when we bring it to the big board, where...
And it murders its way onto the list.
Yes, exactly. So we have a big list of best to worst Star Trek episodes. At number one, we still have Emissary from Deep Space Nine. And at number 12, we still have Broken Bow, the pilot for Enterprise. And there they will probably both stay, at least for now. And yeah, looking at the original series episodes, the top ones we have are The Cage in at number 4, and then Errand of Mercy in at number 6, currently at like the midpoint. And I think it's definitely better than Errand of Mercy. I think it's better than The Cage just because it does stuff. And I like The Cage, don't get me wrong. I enjoy all the hokiness of The Cage, but this accomplishes more with the time that it's got.
So I'm definitely... So like The Cage is number 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I like the idea of putting Mirror Mirror in at number 4, because it means that once, like how Mirror Kirk ascended captaincy of the Enterprise, he ascends to captaincy of the list by stabbing Pike in the back and stealing his spot. So I feel thematically this has to go in at number 4. Like, I can pop this on again, and oh, not God, just yes. For the boots.
No.
And I just realized my stepdad has started listening to the show. Effie's still here at this point. Hi, Phil. Love you. You are learning all sorts of strange things about what I like in life. And Turnabout is fair play. All I'm going to say.
Yeah, this is where I'm quite pleased that my father's acknowledged the existence of this, and that's as far as he'll go. Yeah, there we have a number 4, Mirror Mirror. Great. So, next, we have a bit of a fast forward through time to Deep Space Nine, and that means I'm up for this one. This is Deep Space Nine, Season 2, Episode 23, Crossover. The episode aired on the 15th of May, 1994. The teleplay is by Peter Allen Fields and Michael Piller. The story by Peter Allen Fields and directed by David Livingston. So neither of us have good hits on our sides of the pond. The number one hit when this aired in the UK was Manchester United FC with Come On You Reds. I have not heard it, but I've also never heard a good song put on the charts by a football team. So I can only imagine what that's going to be like.
Have Brighton Hove Albion put out a song? I feel like they must have done.
I don't know, but now I feel I'm going to have to look just in case. And it will be bad, but I will...
I'm kind of surprised that, like, I have a bunch of friends over here who are into football, and I'm surprised that Brighton's doing really well this year.
Yeah.
I think we're, like, number 4, according to the list my friend mate showed me.
I've no idea, but I just know they're doing well, as my team leaders are both big Brighton fans, and yeah, good for them.
I, I have my American friends, like, I have one who's into, who's a fan of Manchester, and I have one who for some reason is into Fulham. I don't know why. Just Fulham.
Yeah.
It's fun to make fun of him. Like, you know, I get Manchester, I get Chelsea, I get Arsenal, Fulham.
Yeah, as a kid, I wasn't a sports kid. The kids who were in the school were all like, okay, who do you support? And I think it was Liverpool or Arsenal, and those were the only two answers. And just because I liked their colours, I said Aston Villa, and I learned no facts about them.
And you were tarred and feathered and never went to school again.
Pretty much, yeah. That was the closest I've ever come to knowing anything about football or really acknowledging any of it. But yeah, that's the UK number one. The USA had All For One performing I Swear. I think I know it, and I don't think I care for it. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
All For One is a name that rings a vague bell. So yeah, I might be thinking of something else a bit boy bandy.
Maybe. I've not heard it. I only know All For One for like the context of like that's a thing from the manga My Hero Academia. And I'm just thinking of Manchester, what, was Britpop taking an off week? Because like this is the mid-90s. Britpop ruled the charts back home.
Yeah, I mean, not so much in the US fair, but yeah, it is the one I'm thinking of. I've no idea why. Okay. I know this song at all, but it was not good.
You weren't a Manchester United fan, that's why.
Or an All For One fan. So I'm looking at my notes and I can tell I'm already going to run long. So if you sort us out with the timer, we'll see how far I can get. Ready?
4, 3, 2, engage.
So, Deep Space Nine, crossover. We cold open with Julian Bashir being an incredibly rubbish passenger to Keira Nerys in a runabout. He's interrupting her meditating. He's trying to play with the music that they've got on there. And of course, he's kind of flirting, but you know, only if she's into it. Otherwise, this totally isn't flirting. But do you want to go to dinner? She does not, and is probably incredible. Thankful when the wormhole opens up, starts going a weird, flashes about a bit, and I get a feeling the wormhole's having a real backlash of secondhand embarrassment for Keira. Once the wormhole closes and they're spat out on the other side, something is wrong. The station's not there, but instead, apparently it's orbiting Bajor. There are some Klingons who beam on board and are immediately terrified of Keira Nerys. They offer up passage to Bajor and to Terok Nor instead of Deep Space Nine. Something weird's going on here. When Julian and Keira arrive, they're instantly confronted by a decidedly un-Taylor-like Garak and by evil sexy Keira Nerys, which does beg the question, did Chris Claremont write this episode? After the opening credits, we learn this is the Mirror Universe again, far more forward than any of the episodes that have been shown so far. Terok Nor's a Bajoran station, and it's part of not the Empire, but the Alliance. Terrans are now slaves who are thrown around into mines and have been overthrown. Speaking of which, that exact thing happens to Julian. He's thrown to Odo and his mining team, and he gets slapped about a bit. Which, you know, he could probably do with. And Keira is given a bit of a tour by Mirror Keira, who is far too intrigued by the possibilities of another version of her being around, and decides to keep Keira kind of as a friend slash pet slash we could do a princess switch kind of thing. Keira explains there was a guy called Kirk, and our Keira has no idea who that is. But anyway, Kirk moved over to the Mirror Universe and inspired Mirror Spock to change his ways. You might remember that from about 15-20 minutes ago on this podcast. The Terran Empire became peaceful and weak enough to get overthrown by a Klingon-Cardassian alliance. The Bajorans, who were Terran slaves, got in on this, are good friends of the alliance, and have put a big weird flag everywhere that kind of looks like if Cthulhu was looming over the Klingon flag. Mirakira doesn't know how to send Kira back and isn't really keen on doing that. Instead, she wants to do her a solid and keep her alive. Just murder Julian. Kira asks, instead of doing that, could you just treat Julian like shit for a while? You know, it's good. It'll build character. And I love that Kira isn't just playing that standard interdimensional playbook here. She is fine with a lot of this. Kira does find Julian in the mines and explains the whole Kirk thing. Julian has heard of him, having obviously read enough biographies to think he can do a Kirk, and he just never quite gets that ability in him. Julian reckons he can speak to Mirror Miles because he's probably good with transporters, even though he is also working the mines here. Kira finds Mirror Quark, which is a bit sad, really. His bar's a lot more sedate, and he doesn't even know what Gold Press Latinum is. Instead, he's been smuggling Terrans out until he gets caught by Garak and dragged off for interrogation before he's able to help Kira. Mirror Sisko shows up. Good timing as he goes, this bar, it's mine now, and starts pouring himself some drinks. It turns out he's a jolly but evil pirate type. And he starts, you know, chucking drinks around for everyone and explains that he's been summoned here by Mirror Kira because she's got another Kira to play about with. And he's impressed by there being a Kira. And she's a bit surprised that a Terran is let to do anything good around here. Apparently, he has no conscience about anything.
I'm gonna have to stop you there.
Oh,
you have failed the Empire, and thus you are punished to 5 to 10 minutes in the agony booth.
Oh God, not the agony booth.
Yes, the agony booth.
It really itches.
Your punishment in the agony booth is to finish recapping the episode, and as soon as you would finish in a clear and concise manner, you'll be executed, and we all go up in rank, and you'll be timed. Your time in the agony booth begins now.
Okay, yeah, so Sisko, he's a bit of a dick. When Miles is trying to keep the station from blowing up and falling apart, he's dragged off by Sisko, who keeps calling him Smiley and loves his disdain, wants him to stop bother keeping the station working because he's got a ship to look after. Mirror Kira runs a bath, summons both Mirror Sisko and OG Kira, probably for some kind of interdimensional threesome, but she's also got the matter of Kira trying to acquire a transporter to get home, which is incredibly impolite because she's got a party planned to do a whole, hey, look, we're twinsies kind of thing. I guess that's how they entertain themselves here. Also, it's dropped in just quickly that transports have been reconfigured post-Kirk to stop interlopers coming in from other dimensions. Quark's brought in to be shown off in a kind of, hey, he's the one that was trying to get you transporters. He's fucked now. And taken off for a quick death in that sort of Mirror Kira switching on and off the charm of going, hey, we're going to have a party, murder this Ferengi. So, the party then, kind of way. Kira warns Bashir that, Kira gets confronted by Mirror Garak, who's very eager to help her get home because he's had enough of one Kira, let alone two. Instead, he wants to disappear Mirror Kira and have the original one pose as her to say, I'm retiring, give all of my stuff to Garak. I'm honestly not the other Kira that everyone knows about. Turns out Terrans weren't just for bad eggs here. Instead, aliens are also pretty bad too. Oh, and if she doesn't go along with Garak's plan, then Julian's going to get murdered. Kira tries warning him and goes to Sisko as well to try and play on his conscience, which he doesn't appear to have. She does mention about how shit everyone treats Terrans, and every time we see Sisko from here on out, he starts noticing more of that himself as well. We have the big party. Kira's here in a blue dress, which seems incredibly not like what we've seen Mirror Kira in so far. But she's welcomed by Garak. Mirror Kira arrives in the same dress and, you know, is here for wacky hijinks. Until Sisko starts watching Klingons imbue a Terran, and that dries out his mood, is a bit peeved. At the mines, everything goes wrong. O'Brien, trying to fix the station repeatedly, turns out he needed to fix the goddamn station because it's all starting to go awry. Things are falling apart. Julian and the miners all see this as an opportunity to escape. Julian grabs a gun and fucking murders Odo. Like, I know this is mirror Odo, but he pops. He pops like a weird goo-filled balloon.
He explodes.
He explodes. Bloody Jesus. Wow.
Odo explodes.
I mean, I'm pleased that the original Odo won't die like this, but it's interesting to see how an Odo dies. What?
I bet that got cut on BBC Two.
Yeah.
I bet the part where Odo explodes got cut on BBC Two.
I don't remember seeing that. But yes. Anyway. Julian is fleeing through air ducts because, you know, you're doing an escape. You need to follow a theme. He finds Mira Miles, who is genuinely just trying to do his goddamn job. Julian gives him a bit of persuasion about how good normal Miles' life is. So, you know, 50-50 truth and lies, ultimately. They're both caught. Mira Kira is very disappointed in them both for everything that's gone on, especially the Odo death. So she orders both Julian and Miles to be put to death. But what's this? Oh my God, Mira Sisko, he's grown a conscience. He rebels. He's like, oh no, this is really rubbish, actually, treating every Terran like this. Pulls guns on Kira and the others, as do the rest of his crew. He runs off with them, decides, I'm going to side with you lot. I'm going to make a resistance. Smiley, you're coming with me, which is frankly good because otherwise Miles would have gone to the original universe to see what things are like there. And that would have just been a bit awkward. So they fly off to be pirates together. Julian and Kira fly off back to the wormhole where they are shot up mildly by Klingons. But they make it through into the main universe where everyone is worried about them. They've been looking for a little while now. And yay, they're back. The fairly abrupt ending.
All right. That was 5 minutes, 20 seconds. But I'm gonna perform an unevil act of charity and say it's 4 minutes, 20, because we did spend about a minute repeating Odo fucking explodes ad nauseum for a minute. So I'm going to give you that.
I knew it was going to cost me time, but Odo fucking explodes. What? I know Mirror Universe people kind of die in this, but Sulu at least just got vanished by a death machine. Like, Odo explodes.
No, Sulu didn't get vanished by a death machine.
Oh, no, it was his mate.
Sulu's high goons got vanished. Sulu was emasculated further by basically saying, you're not worth Tantalus trapping.
Oh, I mean, to be honest, he kind of was. You know, he did deserve it. But yeah, Jesus, that was raw. I didn't expect to be as affected by Odo getting butchered like that.
That's definitely something that was cut pre-Watershed.
Yeah, it must have been.
Okay.
Oh my word.
Egg timer.
Okay.
I both quickly egg timer.
Okay, egg timer.
For our American viewers, in the UK, we have something called the Watershed, which means that before 9 p.m., you cannot show certain levels of violence, sexuality, or bad language. This leads to post-Watershed, where after 9 o'clock, where in theory, any impressionable children are in bed, it's violence, swearing, and 6 o'clock after 9 p.m. on British television.
Yeah, well done. And before the timer ran out. Yeah, I keep forgetting there's not such a thing over there.
Yeah, it's weird. Once I was at my parents-in-law's house, and it was a Sunday morning, and they were showing Shaun of the Dead on, like, Sci-Fi Channel. But they were blanking out all the swearing. All the swearing was blanked out. The parts with the zombie and gore isn't as...
Weird. So this episode feels so different from the other Mirror Universe episodes, just because it's so far along in the timeline. And I know that the DS9 crossover episodes, there's going to be multiple of them, and things change fast in there. But it's, I'm pleased I saw this one last, just because it was odd how different it was. You know, this is where the Empire's experiment has failed. It is not, it was never good to begin with, but this is just proving it was a rubbish idea. And unfortunately, the people that came along afterwards only knew how to behave in a kind of, well, that worked, so let's also be rubbish.
Well, okay, it's the Cardassians and the Klingons, so, you know, even in the, like, the main universe, they're known for their cruelty and their unhandedness. So I feel like what we're seeing here is, like, this is how the Cardassians are when they're in a decent position of power, which they're very, which they seem to be very much not when you see them repeatedly through DS9. It's just like the main difference is the Bajorans are in a much better position. And I think that's really like the big juxtaposition. Although I'm going to sidetrack, seeing Garak look really butch in his bulky Cardassian armor. Like, I didn't realize how bulky they make the costumes until I'm seeing Garak not wearing like his regular clothes. I'm like, you're butching it up, mate.
Nice. I like when they are able to just have a quick break from Garak being, you know, the fun, slightly Faye Taylor, and go, oh no, he was a real piece of work.
He's not a smart man.
No.
Like, he is basically, he is Gul Dukat in this universe.
Hmm.
Like, he is essentially a sadistic, murder-happy fuck. Like, I really liked Kira. And it's not just because of the PVC, although the PVC helped.
It does help, yeah.
Because I was expecting, from my memory of some of these episodes, I was expecting her to be more of, like, a sadistic space villain-ness, like Servalan from a cult British TV show, Blake Seven, whose main villain is, like, what if Joan Collins was in charge of the SS? Whereas Kira here, she's evil and sadistic, but she feels more like a spoilt child than anything else. She just wants a friend. Like, she does, like, you know, she clearly has all this power, all this authority, all this respect and fear, but no one ever gives her the love she wants. So, like, when she sees Kira, like, there is that kind of pseudo-sexual kind of tension, but at the same time, it just always feels like Kira, Superintendent Kira, just kind of wants someone that she can have as, like, a girlfriend. As in, a friend who is a girl. Whereas, you know, I like the fact that our Kira was kind of okay with the idea of Bajor being in charge, and wanted to make some notes so that she could take back. And it was nice to see Kira be manipulative, because she is, like, Kira is very much like a blunt force instrument normally. So it's nice to see Kira showing actually a very kind of manipulative streak that she does show on and off. And I think that just really gives her layers.
Yeah. When she was being told why Bajor got, like, where it is and how things were. I know, like, a few minutes in, you go, oh, she's just buttering up Intendant Kira to kind of placate her temporarily. But an amount of her, we need some of this strength back where I'm from. You know, all of that. While it's an angle, you could hear what she's saying. There's definitely an amount of sincerity, an amount of belief, even if she's mainly trying to get home. And that's more fascinating than your standard kind of, well, we know the rules, you know, standard parallel universe rules, hide, find a way back, all of that. So, you know, maybe do something a bit more with it.
I feel like this is definitely where DS9 being much stronger in its character work than TOS ever really was the show, because, like, you've got 20 years of development on how much depth you can show on a weekly TV show. Because, like, it's not as broad as Mirror Mirror is. So, like, you have O'Brien, who is, like, the same, but he's just much more beaten. He's just completely beaten down. You have Quark, who is the same kind of, like, friendly barkeep, but is also kind of like a crap version of Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca, because he's trying to help smuggle people out and to get his unfortunate demise, where he is beaten, tortured, and executed. Yeah, you have Kira. The only one I never really bought was Sisko, because I felt like his switch from I don't care to Vive la Resistance reminds me of like Star Wars Rogue One. Like one of my big problems with that film is that the main character Jin, she starts out going, it's fine with the Empire conquering everything as long as you don't look up. And then like by the end of the film, she's willing to like fight for the good fight, sacrifice herself for the cause. And you're kind of missing the part in the middle where it kind of, the connective tissue kind of makes sense. And I feel like Sisko gets like a few brief looks, but then it's after O'Brien's really well-delivered speech, which I have to wonder how much Colm Meaney, who is an Irish national, is channeling all the bullshit that's happened in Ireland into that speech. Because he does kind of sell what would normally be like cheesy speech about fight wanting to be free, number 579, into something that really does kind of feel powerful. But it never feels that it's been enough to kind of sway Sisko.
So going through it, obviously it's only got about 40 minutes to sell all these things. I'd be curious to know how Sisko ended up in the position that he was, and what changed, like what, where the roads diverged between that Sisko and our Sisko. And you can see, even though it's only minor moments, the second that Kira tries to sell Sisko on maybe what's going on with the Terrans is a bit shit, maybe do something about all this, suddenly he is seeing it everywhere in all the microaggressions and all the aggressions towards Terrans. The moment that that one of them bumps into a rowdy drunk Klingon and is abused and beaten for it, all of that culminating in the sod it, let's just murder these two, we don't care, just sling up a noose, it'll show the others. I get that it's a breaking point, but of course it is a breaking point that's reached awfully quickly.
Yeah. Do you want to... I found out a little bit of trivia, which is kind of ironic given what happens later in DS9. They wanted to have Michael Dorn play the Klingon, and he would have had the Garak role, and then Garak would have had like the side Klingon role, but they couldn't get him because I think they were still doing like the last season of Next Gen. So they swapped up and gave Garak a bigger part, which is kind of ironic because Michael Dorn comes in as a series regular in like 2 years.
It's a good fun episode, and that's lucky because there will be many more mirror episodes in DS9 to come. And I guess there's the question of where we put it on the list. Now, we've only got two DS9 episodes currently occupying the number one and number three spots with Emissary and House of Quark, respectively. Would you say that Crossover is better than either of those?
No. Like, for all the PVC in the world, no. That's my criteria on this one.
Okay.
I definitely think it's, like, definitely... in like probably in the 5 to 10 category, is it as good as The Cage?
Oh, there. So we're already skipping past Mirror Mirror in the number four slot and going down to The Cage. Is it better than The Cage?
Ooh.
While I like the characters and I like all of the things there, it's... the sets are all just grimy. They feel like they've just taken away half the lighting and they've not done enough. And what is up with all the mine stuff anyway? So are they mining? I don't know if I just wasn't paying attention, but it's a mining station. So do they just bring in asteroids and hack them apart there?
No, because that's why the Cardassians came to Bajor and they strip mined the planet. And they take the ore up to DS9 to to refine it. That's why it's changed locations, because it's where the station used to be before it got moved to the wormhole in Emissary.
Yeah, so I don't know. The mind stuff always was a bit odd anyway, of like, yes, you are here doing all of this in our kind of set of pipes and tubes and things. But if it's refining more than actually, you know, carving it out, that makes sense. Anyway, my ignorance aside. So I think probably under the cage, we next have the Vulcan Hello / Battle of the Binary Stars.
I'm going to say it's better. I'm honestly going to say it's better than the Discovery opener, because Odo fucking explodes.
Odo fucking explodes. Like, they exploded Odo.
Like,
I mean, who does that?
Is that just like did they make an entire fake Odo out of goo and then just blow it up with a squib? Or is it like a digital effect? Because, like, it's a good effect, because, like, they blow him up.
They really did. Okay, yeah, I'm good with that there. So that puts it at the number 6 spot. There will be other Mirror Universe episodes for DS9, but none where they blow up Odo.
Like, they shoot people, they stab people, I think, but they don't make a guy explode.
Well, yeah, they love tiny knives, but apparently by the time you hit DS9 era, it's all about fucking exploding people.
They have big knives. Like, yeah. Sisko has, like, a big bloody knife.
I mean, you know, you'd hope after, like, 100-odd years, they would develop better knife technology, I guess.
It's like Dune. Like, Dune is all about knives. No, but then they have reasons because of how personal shields work in Dune.
Of course.
But this is not casual Dune. I refuse to do casual Dune.
No, let's never do casual Dune. Okay, right. So, our third episode tonight is Star Trek Discovery, Season 1, Episode 10, titled Despite Yourself. It aired on the 7th of January, 2018. It's written by Sean Cochran, directed by Jonathan Frakes, and somehow isn't named after a jazz tune, which I'm very disappointed in him with that. We've got an odd double bill of UK and US number one hits. The UK has the unlikely sounding team up of Eminem and Ed Sheeran with River. And the US has Ed Sheeran with Beyonce performing Perfect. I don't care for Ed Sheeran. I didn't listen to either of these.
That's too much. All I know about Ed Sheeran is that one film, I think it was Yesterday, where, like, the guy ends up in the universe where the Beatles never happened, so he indulges in plagiarism, and Ed Sheeran plays himself. And that's too much Ed Sheeran. This is too much Ed Sheeran.
I remember him briefly in Game of Thrones, and I've been subjected to him, primarily from buskers, admittedly. And, yeah, I don't care for him or for these.
I miss Brighton. I miss Brighton. Like, now that you mentioned buskers, I just remember they exist.
Oh my word. There are some, yeah, like Hallelujah is still the number one go-to for buskers, but I've heard sad folk indie sounding Oasis covers, which was bad. I'm a man of peace, but given a suitable size rock, I would have thrown it at the man. Anyway. Threats of violence against an unknown busker aside, let's find out what Despite Yourself is all about. So, if you're ready, 3, 2, 1, engage.
Due to shenanigans, the USS Discovery has spore-drived themselves into an evil mirror universe. They discover this by finding themselves in a debris field and with ships that shouldn't be there, and they get attacked by a Vulcan ship. They find a black box from one of these blown up ships and discover, oh wait, we're in an evil fascist universe. Ope, as we say in Wisconsin. They discover who they are, and they find out the Discovery is led by the evil mirror universe version of Tilly, who in this universe, the signifier of evil isn't a goatee, it isn't a full body PVC cat suit, it's actually the hairstyle of soccer mums who complain about their drinks at Starbucks. So we know that this universe is truly and irredeemably evil. So they discover that the events of a previous episode, which hasn't been covered by us from Discovery, still happened, and that a previous incursion has occurred with a ship called the USS Defiant, not that USS Defiant. Lorca makes everyone dress up as fascists and tells them that they have to put their best fash on in order to survive in this cruel, wicked universe. It might be that he's actually evil from this universe, and we'll find that out in a couple episodes' time. But in this universe, he actually led a revolution and killed this universe's Michael Burnham. They hit upon the old, let's disguise myself as my evil duplicate caper and pretend that Michael didn't die and actually captured Lorca. They go to the mirror universe of the Shenzhou, the ship which was blown up in the Battle of the Binary Stars. We did cover that episode, which is captained by Connor, who was an extra who got killed in that episode. Michael, the guy who's actually a Klingon, whose name I've forgotten.
Ash Taylor
and Lorca go aboard the Shenzhou. Captain Connor immediately tries to kill Michael Burnham to maintain his rank as captain. Michael doesn't do a Starfleet. Instead, she shanks a guy in the lift to rapturous applause. And they're heading off to meet the Emperor to get the information they need. That is the A plot. The B plot is that, oh my god, names are failing me today.
Oh, no.
Is that the engineer who's in charge of the spore drive
Stamets.
Is comatose, Stamets, and his boyfriend, the doctor, is looking after him. At the same time, Ash Taylor has been having some issues, again, flashbacks of stuff he doesn't remember happening. It turns out that actually it's not brainwashing. Oh no, he's actually a Klingon surgically altered to be a human, and he responds to this quite naturally by snapping the doctor's neck in some unintentional act of burying your gaze. And that hasn't been discovered in the B-plot, because Ash is now ends the episode shacking up with Michael Burnham in the evil Shenzhou, and I believe that is it, because not a lot happens in this episode.
Oh my word. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you basically...
I did it.
Kind of.
Did I sum it up?
I mean,
did I actually,
like, yeah, there are bits, but we can chat about those. That's minus 1 minute and 13.
Minus 1 minute. Champion!
I swear, champion. Only when we do Picard episodes will they get shorter, you know?
Okay, I am waiting for the animated series episodes, which, you know, which we take like 10 minutes to describe.
Oh no. Okay, so yeah, so there's still, like, this is set before the original series Mirror Mirror, and
yep,
it's still a heavy betrayal based society. And yeah, like, there's mention of an emperor who we don't see in this episode, but is gonna turn out to be, God, I'm being
Philippa Georgiou
now. Yeah, Georgiou, who
Michelle Yeoh. Yeah.
Yeah, who is very good, but also, yeah, might have outstayed her welcome, in my opinion, in the future seasons of it.
She's a good actress, and have you had a chance to see Everything Everywhere All at Once yet?
It has literally just appeared on Prime, so it is one of the next things that I will be trying to see.
Because she is amazing. Okay, I'm not, like, she is amazing in, like, in everything I've seen her in, but,
yeah,
like, Everything Ever All at Once, she's bloody amazing. Like, when I was watching the episode, I hate the term show, don't tell, because I believe it's one of those terms which has kind of, its meaning has been mutated beyond all recognition, and it's now just kind of used as buzzwords by people who have very strict ideas on how you write different formats and mediums.
Yeah, people that just want a Wikipedia entry.
Yeah, what I came up with while watching this was what I called Warren Ellis syndrome.
Uh-oh.
Because...
Uh-oh, are we going to hit some problematic territory here?
No.
Warren Ellis is... Warren Ellis syndrome.
No, no. No, because like Warren Ellis, despite the problematic elements as a human being aside, he has this problem of padding out his comics and clearly writing for a trade paperback. I could have called this Bendis syndrome, because he's far more guilty of it. And that's how this felt. Because, like, the reason why I was able to, like, sum this up, with a minute to go, Tribune...
Oh, I'm never going to live this down.
...is because, like, not a lot happens. And there's a lot of talking about how they're in an evil, cruel mirror universe. But not a lot actually happens. It's them talking about it. And, like, the best bit is where Tilly has to pretend to be evil.
Yeah. Yeah, this is why I selected this.
Because Tilly is wonderful.
Yes. Like, earlier in the episode, she manages to annoy Stamets into lucidity very briefly. And it's good that she gets more confident as the show goes on. And that's reflected in kind of how she is and where she goes career-wise. At the same time, the whole Captain Killy thing is, it could have been more wacky than it was. And it's somewhat wacky, but
It's very Whedon-esque in like, we're a serious show who's trying to do comedy. Then again, it's Star Trek. Seeing Star Trek do comedy is always kind of difficult at the best of times. Mm. And I feel like the modern era of Trek kind of falls back on characters kind of being eccentrically wacky, and that kind of postmodern Whedon style does get a bit grating, even if I find the characters a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think my threshold for that kind of bullshit is higher than yours. But yeah, sometimes you go, oh, this is a little jarring with them. I find, as much as I gushed about Strange New Worlds in episode 4, there are a couple of times where it's like, you feel like someone who's presenting a Geek and Sundry show with some of the cast members.
As much as I like Nurse Chapel, Nurse Chapel does kind of fall victim to this most in that show.
Hmm.
But we're not here to talk about wacky dialogue. No. Okay.
So the Ash Tyler thing, right. This is the exact point that my partner gave up on Discovery. The murder of Culber. And the kind of... Oh, so yeah, you're just gonna arbitrarily murder one of the gay couple in this episode. The first canonical main character gay couple.
It's the first TV. It's like the first queer relationship in the show, in the TV franchise.
And they're great, Culber and Stamets. And the plot as it goes on recovers, but is still recovering where I'm at halfway through season 4, you know? And for Ash Tyler, who I don't care for, I've said this before about him. I find him, when he's human, extremely uninteresting. And then with the Klingon stuff, there's a little bit, but not enough. Oh, and the other thing from that episode, that Strange New Worlds episode, how did I not mention a Summers family with their weird time-lost child? Anyway, we're nearing an hour and a half in on the recording, and I hope for your sake, audience at home, it's going to be cut down less than that, so I will not get on a Summers family diversion yet.
Please, no, we don't have enough hourglasses for that.
We really don't.
Three things I noticed, which is how, again, one is how, like, I believe presentation of gender has evolved from the 60s, where all the women in the mirror universe as seen in Mirror Mirror are all, like, sexy concubines. We've now reached a point where all evil women are basically kinky space dominatrixes.
Yeah.
Again, it's how I believe gender equality has kind of evolved, but at the same time, de-evolved. Because now we've gone from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, well, maybe the Enterprise in Mirror Mirror is just an outlier, you know? Because we've got the style here, then in crossover, and maybe there was just a brief blip.
Maybe the Enterprise in Mirror Mirror was like the Golga Frincham B arc from Hitchhikers, where all the really dumb members of the Empire are stuck on a ship and go over there and die for the glory of the Empire and don't mess up our fun.
That'd explain a lot.
It would explain a lot. But at the same time, I feel like the Empire is presented here is presented as far more competent than it's shown. And I wonder if that's simply, it's like how the Empire in Star Wars kind of sometimes gets presented like 20, 30, 40 years on, is that as people who grew up with these franchises and are writing them, they're writing these organizations as far more competent and cool than they're meant to be, and then unintentionally kind of going, hey, fascism is cool, we have order and the trains run on time. I mean, the space trains run on space time.
Well, yeah, obviously. Yeah, it's a weird one with that. You don't want to go, oh yeah, this is all just a collection of doofuses who are all really rubbish at everything. But at the same time, a lot of really awful fascistic groups are a bunch of fucking doofuses who were addicted to all kinds of daft drugs and researching weird cult stuff and not
Warhammer 40k is gloriously unabashedly dumb, and you've got people treating it like it's like serious SF. And my kind of my big problem with this one was that when in like you've got Mirror Mirror, where like Kirk and co are trying to do their best not to let people die to maintain their cover, because they're still like maintaining their values. In this, Michael shanks a guy without hesitation.
Yeah. I mean, you can see the shock on her face, but the plot moves too quickly for that.
Is that kind of like post Y2K, like, is that kind of post Y2K, post 24 idea of sometimes you have to sacrifice your better morality for the greater good? Which I don't know if it's just kind of like, I've always wondered, like, given like some of the like behind the scenes stuff with Discovery, if this was kind of, they did the Mirror Universe to kind of get people interested in rewatching, like the like just kind of saving throw of the story.
Mm.
If you know what I mean, like because like there's like apparently like a load of behind the scenes drama with Brian Fuller being on the show and then leaving the show, and like after like six or so episodes of like Klingon War, they jump for like the second half of the show to do the Mirror Universe stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's much more serialized TV. So we're not really seeing the full, conclusion of the story. We're just seeing, they're basically doing in 50 minutes what it took Mirror Mirror and Crossover like 5 to 10 minutes to do.
Yeah. It's got a couple of charming moments. It's got some really dull ones and some bits and pieces that, you know, it feels saved by the give everyone in the ship a makeover. You know, Tilly needs coaching slightly on her lines, and Lorca is doing shocked Pikachu face a lot of the time, going, what, a mirror universe full of evil people? I know nothing about this, but also tell them these specific things.
I liked his Scottish accent.
Yes, that being the Scottish engineer felt very, very like, on the nose.
But yeah, like, you know, Discovery for all this kind of like big plot stuff, the kind of sometimes where the big plot stuff kind of falls apart, I feel like Discovery sometimes works better with like the characters, with the kind of character stuff. Like it always makes sure that you have your characters have a duologue, like every few scenes, to kind of make sure that we kind of feel for these characters. But at the same time, you kind of want the plot to be moving, and the plot doesn't really move.
So, speaking of plots moving, it's probably a good time to have a look at the big board. Now, I'm having a look here. We got two Discovery episodes on the list. We got one at the exact halfway point with the Vulcan Hello and Battle at the Binary Stars. We got one at number 9, which is Through the Valley of Shadows. And I think Through the Valley of Shadows is better than this. As much as I had things to enjoy, they were moments to enjoy rather than whole storylines to enjoy. And, you know, it did the impossible of making me care about Ash Tyler and his offspring.
there's an old term which is used in Doctor Who called moments of charm, where the script editor Terrence Dix asked John Pertwee what he kind of wants to have his character do, and like John Pertwee was like, just give me a few moments of charm here and there. And so, like, you have little scenes where John Pertwee's Doctor gets to talk about how wonderful daisies are, or just like these little moments where you see that the character is more than just kind of like this very camp, flamboyant James Bond type, and that he's like deep down this very emotionally caring alien. And that's this how like those small, like the bits where you have Tilly and Michael, or Tilly trying to make Stamets wake up by being annoying, are inherently charming and delightful. It's just not really, that's not going to carry an episode.
So up until recently, this was our halfway point, and now it's right near the bottom because we've picked some top heavy episodes. How does it fare to encounter at far point? It's a difficult one. Like, always feels like a difficult bridge to cross.
I really don't want to say that Encounter at Farpoint is better, because I know I'll probably get jumped in the streets. But at the same time, I want to see Grant Lazorn's jam band. Encounter at Farpoint is bad, but it's one of those, it's almost Plan 9ian in its, this is bad, but I will watch this far more than I will watch Despite You, because like it's chapter 10 of like a 16 episode story. It has far less rewatchability unless I'm watching the whole of Discovery, and that I feel like every time we talk about Discovery, this is what's going to keep losing Discovery points. Like, I feel at some point we may just have to, when we talk about Discovery, have Discovery on its own list where we rank it, like a sub list where we rank Discovery amongst itself.
I've been trying to compile the list of the episodes and combining like part one and twos of things. And it's difficult when it comes to Picard and Discovery because of exactly that. There's no easy way to go, this is part one of five or anything like that. But yeah, Despite Yourself has good moments, but it doesn't have those character defining moments that Encounter at Farpoint has. So I'm going to ask an obvious question here. Is it better than Strange New World, singular, with Enterprise, where Trip gets even more racist than usual?
Oh, always.
Yeah, yeah. Good.
Yeah, yeah.
So this puts it at the number 12 spot on the list.
And that's 12, that's 12 out of how many at this point?
15 now. This is 15 that we're at. So yeah, we're getting a sizable list. I'm going to have to add more numbers to the spreadsheet. That's how far we're getting now.
Our list can now rent out 15 certificate movies from... Where do you rent movies now these days? Because like Blockbusters is done. No more Video Box.
Oh, RIP Video Box. Mostly just off licenses now. Yeah, I was there when they converted... bit by bit, like slowly adding more booze and removing more VHS tapes and the occasional DVDs, because, you know, they're keeping with the times, even as they were in their death throes. Anyway, this is not a Video Box podcast. This is a Star Trek podcast, and we are done with these episodes. So next, we just have to tell you where we can find our work. And you can always go to Ko-fi and to Casual Trek there if you want to buy us a coffee. That'd be nice, and help justify some of the expenses of mainly Paramount Plus, to be honest. So yeah, next time we're actually going to be doing something closer to one of the other fandoms that I have, which is horror. We're going to be doing some spooky tricks and treats for Halloween, and if I'm lucky and have timed this right, the episode will be airing on Halloween itself. Oh yes. Outside the show, you can find me at Who Dares Roles, where I talk about independent role-playing games. You can find my comics at skyshark.itch.io and on Twitter at charlie_en, where I post about X-Men literally every day.
And you can find me on Twitter at @manmiles, where I make fun of conservatives and talk about Doctor Who an unhealthy amount of time.
It's valuable work.
It's valuable time. And you can also find me at places I'm not going to say out loud because that will constitute as stalking.
Yes. So, with all that done, we'll see you next time. Now go do a Starfleet.
Live long and have a jelly baby.
You have been listening to Casual Trek by Charlie Etheridge Nunn and Miles Reed Lobato. The intro theme was by Alfred Etheridge Nunn. Star Trek's owned by Paramount, and Casual Trek is part of the Nerd and Tie Network.